This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
There is a queer angle to every issue, and we will find it. But don't expect us to be nice or politically correct. Nothing is sacred, and the team will be finding the queer and profane wherever we can on Joy 94.9. Is nothing sacred?
Hi there, Joysters. This is Jim, and you're listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. And thanks to Sonia and her mates for Broad, which was a fabulous show tonight. And I'm in the studio with Steph. Hello, Steph.
Hello, Jim.
And James. Hello, James.
Hello, hello.
And we've got a special guest tonight, and it is special for lots of reasons. We've got Luke Hilikari, who's the Secretary of the Victorian Trades Hall Council. And Luke is terribly excited to be here because we know that there's going to be a double dissolution, don't we, Luke?
What an exciting night to be on air, huh?
It is. So we are going to be talking politics tonight, people.
For a change.
Yeah, just for a change. You know how we never speak politics on this show. Well, tonight we're going to break that rule. We are going to talk politics all night. We're going to talk about the demise of the Abbott government, because that's what it is. Don't let anybody fool you. It is still the Abbott government. And
a bit about unions, I think we can.
I think we'll be talking a bit about unions.
It's the Comrade Hour, isn't it?
It's the Comrade Hour. And so we're going to have a very long and quite in-depth discussion about those issues. So if you want to join this, get your listening ears on now, and you can
text in on 0427 JOY949, that's 0427 569949, or you can email onair, that's one word, at joy.org.au, onair at joy.org.au.
And if you're an LGBTIQ union member, please let us know that you're listening. Because I'm sure that there are some of you, in fact, I know there are some of you, I've seen those people at rallies that have a thing saying, proud to be queer in union.
How about the Pride March delegation?
Yeah, that was good.
It's getting good. Every year we're getting bigger. So if you're not at that, you have to be at that next year.
We saw you there, don't worry.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I think we're going to kick off with a clip from one of our guests from a couple of weeks ago.
Who also taught politics without us asking her, didn't she?
Yeah, I think she was pretty happy to talk politics. A couple of weeks ago we did an episode about Australian media, and we talked to Van Badham and Lane Sainty, which was a great show. I was very happy with that show. But got to say, Van was pretty mad about...
She was feisty. Feisty is the only word.
About various things. One was the new Senate reform, and this is what she had to say. We're going to talk more about it in a sec.
It's going to lead to a wipeout of the crossbench, a disabling of one of the few democratic mechanisms we have to get independents into the Senate. It's going to get really, really hard for those people to get elected. The disenfranchisement of around 3 million Australians. And it plays, of course, into the hands of Malcolm Turnbull to turn around to the crossbenchers and go, you're going to get wiped out. The Senate voting change has gone through. I would like this legislation, or there's going to be a double dissolution, which will make your life even harder.
So that was just a little clip from Van Badham, who was on our show a couple of weeks ago.
It was a taster of what she...
I have to say, just preface this with, this was her view on Senate reform. People have mixed and varied views about the outcomes, and we're actually not going to know exactly what's going to happen until the election, which might be happening pretty soon.
I actually think that it's not quite as cut and dry as people think, because I actually think that that some of the crossbenchers will do better than than what people are talking about. And the Nick Xenophon team is definitely going to do better. And both the major parties, in fact, all three of the major parties, Labor, Liberals and Greens, I think should be quivering in their boots in South Australia.
Oh, completely. Like,
him.
What we're going to see here is Van Badham was a little bit of Nostradamus, wasn't she? She predicted what was going to happen, and then it sort of happened. So the ABCC bill was brought on today, and then we saw it got defeated, like, just a couple of hours ago. So this is hot, fresh, breaking news, right? And now we're going to see election on July 2nd. And won't that be complete chaos between now and then? It'll be magnificent.
It will be fantastic. I can't wait.
People are kind of not that into Malcolm Turnbull as they used to be, though. Like, I think a few years ago, it was just a done deal. Why are we even having the election? Let's just, like, skip the crap and, like, let him stick around for 4 years. But now, you know.
Not my house, it wasn't.
Well, it's an interesting point because people were thinking, you know, there's a lot of hope and expectation around this fresh, good-looking man with a nice suit, wears a suit real well. But when he came into it, he's in a really difficult position because he can't go and what we all think is to follow his more liberal, you know, small-L liberal tendencies because the right of his party are going to come at him. But he's in another problem if he does nothing or we're all going to vote him out. So he's almost put himself in an impossible situation this election.
He has. He hasn't actually learnt the lesson that lots of young political commentators have been talking about for some time, that the Liberal Party has jettisoned liberalism and it has handed over liberalism to both the Greens and to the Labor Party. And so those two parties are really the liberal parties of Australia in terms of little L liberalism.
They still have neoliberalism, which is how, like, the liberalism that I kind of assume
trickle
that they
down
are.
Liberalism, that's called.
I mean, neoliberalism in the sense of, you know, let everyone do what they want, especially the rich people, without consequence of what that means for everyone else. That's neoliberalism, isn't it? Make money at all costs.
Yeah, make money at all costs is what neoliberalism is. And it's all about the market will rule and the market will always find a way through. And there is something in that, but it's not really evidence-based.
I suppose that's what we've seen by evidence of cutting, you know, in excess of $100 million from ASIC, who's meant to actually be the watchdog of the corporate. It's meant to be the corporate regulator. And, of course, we know what's happened as a result of that. And now they're even admitting themselves in ASIC that they can't police it.
Did you want to explain to listeners what happened?
Well, there was about $160 million. I'm happy to be corrected.
The Australian Securities and Investments Commission.
They are. And this is the one that Morrison and Turnbull keep pointing to and saying, well, they already have the powers of a Royal Commission, which, of course, Labor and the Greens had been calling for since the, you know, the revelations that have come out of the banking sector, which has just been quite, you know, harrowing in a lot of ways. But of course, when there's plenty of noise when it happens in perhaps isolated unions, but when it happens on a grand scale in the banking sector, you see almost, you know, silence from the neoliberal, you know, core that you were talking about. So it is a very interesting point.
And I reckon playing on that point, we saw the Panama Papers come out, didn't we?
Mm.
800 Australians using tax havens to avoid paying the tax that we all do, right, listeners? We all pay this tax. This tax is important because it goes on, like, schools and hospital and roads and all the things we love. But at the same time, which they want to refer these things to ASICs or the ATO, you know, 4,000 of those staff members have lost their job. So if you really want someone to investigate this, you've got to empower them, and you empower them by actually funding staff.
But my favourite political organisation in Australia at the moment is GetUp, has been for some time, and GetUp's had a fantastic campaign running, which might be quite telling in this election, where they've actually pointed out statistically, they've got the figures, they've got the evidence, that if the group of people who've been avoiding their taxes And in many ways, the big companies and the rich who avoid their taxes are doing it quite legally because it's law that they're allowed to do it. If they paid the tax that the rest of us pay, we would have enough money to restore all the cuts to the schools and hospitals, fund back the CSIRO, fund back ASIC properly, and still have a bit of money to play with. And so much for the budget emergency.
Well, it comes back, I suppose, as well, if we are going to live in, you know, the rhetoric certainly has changed slightly. If we are going to live in a more, future-focused creative economy, then we must focus our attention on education. And we know that a needs-based funding model is what we need. And yes, there is a price tag, but we can actually afford it. We just need to actually raise that revenue.
And it's about investment now for economic benefit later as well.
Absolutely. It's a bit of more of a longer-term economic focus.
That's what Gonski was all about, right? So pre the last election, we had both the Labor Party and the Greens and the Liberal Party all saying they were going to invest in Gonski. And sure enough, you know, and anyone could have, you know, told you this story, as soon as the Liberal Party got into, they actually shirked that commitment.
And the only Liberals now that are talking about Gonski are the New South Wales Education Minister, who's a Liberal, has really got stuck into Simon Birmingham last week for failing Gonski.
Good.
which is great. I love the fact that they're just spending their whole time fighting amongst themselves.
Hello, you are listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. Given the happenings in Parliament House today, we are talking politics for a change. And here in the studio, we have Luke Hilikari from the Trades Hall. So we're talking a bit about the Senate, a bit about unions. You just heard There Is Power in a Union by Billy Bragg. Very strong, powerful, hopefully inspiring song.
Everyone, and go join your union now. You've heard the music.
Yeah.
That won't fire up.
Yeah. And, like, you know, imagine if you were in the union, you could, like, sing it with 100 other people and they'll be way
and
funner.
And you could go to your next union meeting and sing that other fabulous Billy Bragg song called Sing If You're Glad to Be Gay.
So I wanted to talk a bit about the ABCC bill. So this is something that has been talked about a lot, but partly around the actual content and partly because Prime Minister Turnbull has said it's going to be the trigger for a double dissolution if it doesn't get passed. So can you give us just a bit of a rundown on what it is, why it's so controversial?
All right, easy done. So it's hardly a barbecue stopper, right? So you don't hear many people around, like the barbecue or the pub, saying, oh my God, you know, construction stuff, ABCC. So let's just nut this out quickly. This is an ideological thing, and it goes back like many, many years. The first time ABCC was introduced was in 2005.
So what's ABCC stand for?
Australian Building Construction Commission.
Excellent.
And what it is a bit of an enforcement body. So John Howard introduced in 2005.
To protect his brother.
Well, some people say that. And went all the way to 2012. What happened in the construction industry is that deaths and injuries went way up. And by way up, I mean that every 10 days while the ABCC was on site, a worker died. That meant that over the period of time which the ABCC exists, we had 300 workers killed on site because unions couldn't go onto those sites and make sure your workplace is safe. Now, yeah, I want you to sort of picture this a little bit. You know, we all go to work and, you know, you might be going to your desk or you might be going on site somewhere. But, you know, if you're on a construction site, you know, your desk moves every single day. It might go up 3 stories.
And it might be a girder that's swinging around on the end of a crane.
That's right. And you're not working to the person you might see next to you every day. There are complete strangers on site that you don't know doing all these different things. So it's a moving feast on this site. And that's why safety is just so important. When the ABCC exists, there was over 12,000 injuries on construction sites. And injuries, I don't mean, you know, I sprained my hand. I mean injuries like I lost my arm. Like, it was a terrible, terrible time. Now the other half of the ABCC, which is the most controversial bit, apart from the deaths, was the idea that you could be called into a room, be questioned without the right for you to have silence, without the right for you to call in a lawyer. Now, if you were convicted, you know, and the cops brought you in or, you know, suspected you of something, and, you know, if you were a drug dealer or if you were accused of murder or something like that.
Wasn't that meant to prevent corruption in the building industry?
Well, that's what they said. That's what they said. But throughout this whole time, we didn't see a worker charge or go to prison. Right, these are the type of powers you have for anti-terror laws, and that was what was being used on our construction sites. And that wasn't cheap. Well, they spent over $150 million to run the ABCC. So you don't have a right to a lawyer. You don't have a right to silence.
When you say you didn't see anyone charged, is that a sign that what they were saying they were doing, they weren't actually doing, or that it wasn't really a problem in the first place?
Wasn't really a problem in the first place. Like, people are just ordinary folk going to work, doing their best, and what they're being called out for is things that they think, you know, we have a right to do as workers, which is from time to time to withdraw our labour. If you withdraw your labour while the ABC was in around, you get fined $34,000. Like, you know, these were horrific, horrific laws that, you know, we wouldn't put up with in a modern democracy, but it's not spoken about much. And so when there's, you know, when you see senators, you know, the Labor Party and the Greens, and then crossbenchers, you know, like, you know, your Ricky Muirs of the world come out and say, no, this isn't on. When Jackie Lambie says, can work out there's a huge problem with it, like, there is a problem with this. And so, you know, it got voted down today, and it got voted down for good reason, because people thought that two different laws for two types of Australians, and there's over 1 million Australians connected somewhere in the construction industry, they would have all been affected by this.
But I saw George Brandis on TV tonight.
I'm sorry about that.
Attorney General. Yeah, I'm sorry about it too, because it was a harrowing situation. But anyway, he carried on about how the reintroduction of the ABCC was a key part of the economic reform agenda of the government.
That's,
how?
Well, it's interesting that they say that, because, you know, they're all about the economics, these guys. If they looked into it, when the ABCC was abolished, productivity and construction went up by 45%. If you don't believe me, just walk around the city right now and look at the skyline. It is just packed full of cranes. Like, it's a major part of our economy, and it's a major part of our economy when there is no ABCC.
And can any hunch, Luke, as to why that might have been, the productivity gains since its abolition?
Yeah, because if you remove this agency that was getting in the way of workers and companies talking to each other, you create a good productivity. You create a harmonious work environment. Imagine if you were going to work and someone got in between you and your employer having a conversation. That becomes very difficult. And that's what was happening across construction sites all across our country.
So with, you know, these comments about it being about anti-corruption, what would be, would there be another solution that would, I guess, address this concern, real or otherwise, while also letting people get on with their job in a safe way?
There should be an anti-corruption body nationwide. It should cover anybody, any company doing the wrong thing. Like, we would support that 100%, because, you know, you all out there, you can see what's actually going on with corporate corruption, and it's not happening by, you know, Jane and John Worker. It's happening at the big end. You know, corporate corruption, find the guy in the suit, not the person wearing shirts and slacks.
And I suppose you could do that in a way that kept people's civil liberties intact, which would be, I would have thought, far more desirable.
Ah, completely. Like, you're 100% dead on there. You know, the right to silence, that's a right everyone should have. The right to talk to a lawyer when you need to talk to a lawyer. Like, how is that, you know, a problem? Why would that even be a thing? Mm. For you not to have that right, you know, there must have been something terribly wrong going on.
What worries me about those sorts of specialist investigatory type things like the ABCC and its proposals is the fact that it's one step away when you say, well, we're going to go for this industry now. Well, the next industry they might go for is some opposition MPs
or environmentalists
or university academics or something like that.
Or any activist group out there.
Or any activist group or civil society groups like the Russians have done and so on.
So with this discussion being in the media a lot, I guess from your position at Trades Hall, have you seen an increase in interest from people in getting involved with the union or people talking about it? Or, like, I know that there's some work that Trades Hall have been doing to engage young people. Could you tell us a bit about that?
So when this hits the headlines, like, everyone starts talking about unions, and we love that, right? Because what we want to do is we want to engage so many people to try to make change in our communities.
So
we want to do that with our partners.
That, Trades Hall are just a bunch of publicity sluts.
Oh, we are a little. you spotted that, Jim, didn't you? But what we like talking about our issues. So the more we can talk about workers and their rights, the better that people will be prepared for what they have to put up with their own workplaces. But also we want to talk about social change. And that's what we love doing with our partners, be it in the LGBTIQ communities, be it out there in our environmental friends, be it we're at the Law Institute of Victoria today talking about legal aid funding. Like, there are so many partners out there that we know we can help make change. And the beauty about the union is we are a movement. Like, we've got 1.6 million people who pay dues each and every week, not just to improve their working lives, but to improve the country. Now, that's the type of community, type of organising that no one else has out there. And we can use that power to improve everyone's, not just working lives, but our social lives too. And that should be our mission.
Mm. Luke, obviously with the, it's become a rather popular sport in some spheres for a bit of union bashing. I mean, maybe a question to pose to you is, what does the broader working public and society face, you know, because it is, I suppose, a reality that we do have a less unionised workforce than we have had previously. But I'll leave you to clarify the numbers on that. But what do we face, you know, what could we potentially lose if, you know, we have a workforce in the future that is, you know, that has very few unionised workers?
Yeah, so a few things have changed. So laws have changed over time. So there used to be things like, you know, closed workshops and stuff like that. They don't exist anymore. So if people want to be a member of a union, they're generally, you know, they want to be there because they see that that union on that worksite is helping to improve their lives. That's what we do, and that's why people want to be part of us, which is amazing. And it's the reason why we're going to grow once again. But to do that, we need to start talking to new communities. We have people of colour. We have emerging communities. We haven't been as strongly represented in those communities as we ought to have. And that's a problem for us that we're dealing with. You spoke about young people. You know, we are actively now talking to people just before they get their first job at school. So we're having that conversation with them about what they should expect their working lives to be like. For many young people, their sole experience at work will be a casualised one. That's the changing nature of our workplace. You know, 40% of people are in some type of casualised job, and to make ends meet, they're working two jobs, three jobs, just to get by. That's not the type of world that we want to imagine for ourselves or for our children or anyone else.
Well, it certainly wasn't the world that we all knew when people had a job that went for 52 weeks of the year, and you got a 4 weeks annual leave, and you got leave loading, and you got sick leave, and you worked basically an 8-hour day. That doesn't exist anymore.
I guess to ask a bit of a controversial question, so the reality is that the work that people are doing in Australia and internationally is becoming more casualised. And I'm wondering if there's a positive feedback loop. I don't mean positive as in good, I mean positive as it reinforces itself, where you have someone working three casual jobs in three different industries. So they might be working in hospitality and in retail and tutoring, if they're uni, say. That, I'm guessing, would be a disincentive to join the union because it's less clear which union to join, the maybe cost of the fees compared to their income, the proportion is bigger. I guess, yeah, is that a problem? And what are unions doing to help stop that reinforcement? And I guess the then continuation of that is, if they're not in the unions then can't fight for their rights.
Yeah, and wouldn't that be a terrible circle, right? So we should take some inspiration about what's going overseas. So if you look what's happening in the States, the Fight for 15 campaign, what an amazing campaign. What they're doing over there is they're trying to fight for a minimum wage of $15. Our minimum wage here is higher than that. You know, our minimum wage is $17. I think it's 29 cents. Don't quote me on the cents, but I know that. So what we want to do is we need to articulate a vision where if we want to think that, you know, the minimum wage of $17 and a little bit of cents isn't enough, we need to be able to do that as a community. We need laws which allow us to bargain at every site and do it together, because that's what unions are all about. But you need that type of vision, and people need to believe it and fight for that change, and they will do that if you can articulate that type of campaign. That's what's happened really well in the States. That's what we need to have happen in Australia.
But you also, don't you, need to have the unions engaged and groups like yours, the peak body of the unions, engaged in social campaigns, social policy campaigns. So, I mean, it's really good to see Trades Hall in the Pride March, for instance, but, you know, there was a very famous and very big union in this country that was anti-LGBT for many, many years. And ridiculously, it had a huge number of gay and lesbian members.
And that view in that union has recently changed.
It has, thank goodness.
Thank the Lord for that.
But we don't thank the Lord for anything.
I thought that union might have been. Anyway, I'm sure that'll come back to me a bit. But yeah, we're partnering upright with Australians for Marriage Equality and Equal Love to test the first type of field campaigns, because we're worried about the idea of a plebiscite. You know, we think, like many people, we should have a straight up and down vote in the parliament.
But they've got the power.
They've got the power. They could do it now, but they're choosing not to.
They could do it this week.
Do it. You're in parliament now.
Yeah, absolutely. Do it now. Bring the bill on. Like, it, you know, we want to vote this thing up. You know, we don't want to have a debate out there like we saw about safe schools. Like, that was outrageous. Horrible. You know, the people that came out of the woodwork, the Australian Christian lobby, You know, there was a lot of people that got some old wounds brought up for no good reason. So if there's going to be a campaign about this, think about what happened in Ireland. It was difficult too for a lot of people, but it was quite beautiful in the end. We want to be part of that. So we're right now working with our partners to do field campaigning. What that means is, you know, weekends there are volunteers getting together on street stalls talking about why we want equal marriage. Now, isn't that a fantastic partnership that unions want to be a part of? Like, who doesn't want to be a part of that? Like, when we talk about this issue to young people, I tell you what the number one issue why they want to enroll to vote. They want to enroll to vote because they want to vote for equal marriage. Isn't that fantastic? Do they want to enroll to vote to, you know, support the Labor Party or the Greens, the Liberal Party? Not so much. Not so much. But do they want to enroll to vote to make change? Oh, completely. So this is the type of campaigns we want to get involved in.
We are going to go to a song. We would love to hear from you. So please SMS us on 0427JOY949. That's 0427569949. Or you can email onair@joy.org.au. You can ask Luke a question. You can have your 2 cents. Tell us what you think about unions, marriage equality, double dissolutions, whatever you like.
We do have a message. We have a message from our guest that we played the clip of right at the beginning of the show, Van Badham, who is a columnist for The Guardian. And we told her, we sent her a message ourselves saying, you're on air in a minute on a clip from your old appearance on the show and you're on with Luke Hilakari from Trades Hall Council. And she sent back a message that says, hooray! So she's very happy.
Thanks, Van.
Thank you, Van. We still like you. You can come back anytime you like.
Who doesn't love Van?
So, we started off the show. Sorry, if anyone who's just tuned in, we are talking to Luke Hilakari from Trades Hall about unions, about the upcoming election, about the ABCC bill. And we're going to go back to the election issue. So, you know, what are we expecting to see? We were expecting the election to be called pretty soon. What are we going to see in the election playing out? What are going to be the big issues, do you reckon?
Budget. So that's the first step, right? So budget's going to be like May 3rd, and that budget is going to probably define a lot of that election. We know there's 21 seats that are really in play. We want to, if we want to change the government, that's what it's going to be. But that budget will be everything. So previously tipped off was they were talking about possibly doing some tax cuts for companies. I don't know after the Panama Papers if that's going to be the most brilliant strategy. What do you think, Jim?
I think that is a dead thing. I think tax cuts, full stop, are a dead thing, and at this moment. But they will have to do something to mollify the big end of town. And what they'll try and do is promise all sorts of stuff regarding the their better economic management and what the ABCC will deliver when they get back after an election and they have their joint sitting of parliament and they bring on the 3 or 4 bills that they've got now to trigger it. Because this is not the only bill that triggers a double dissolution. They've also got a bill that cracks down hard on civil society through the Incorporated Associations Act or something. I can't remember what it's called. But that's another attack on... So the ABCC is an attack on working people and unions, and the other bill, I think, is an attack on civil society, that is the sort of community-based organisations we all love and belong to. So NGOs and so on.
You mentioned that you think there's, we would say, 21 seats that are in play. Do you know what those seats are in Victoria that we should watch for?
So there's, if you're on election night and you're sitting around with your friends and you're having a wine and playing like election bingo, the 4 seats that you should be looking out for is Deakin. So Deakin's sort of Ringwoody way, think Croydon, think sort of eastern suburbs. Corangamite's next. So Corangamite is around Geelong and it heads all the way to Torquay and then pushes out to Colac. It's quite an interesting mix there. A lot of issues that will be playing that seat will especially about jobs because you've got the close down of the Ford factory. That's coming like real fast. There'll be a lot of people out there who will be really thinking about what that will mean for their communities. You go across the bay. Across the bay, and you've got the seat of Dunkley. Now, the sitting member there, Bruce Bilson, is resigning, and he was actually quite a popular member. Bruce Bilson is probably worth...
He's a Liberal, isn't he?
He's a Liberal, and he's probably worth about 3%. These are all Liberal seats, by the way. So it's probably worth somewhere in the order of 3%. That probably makes it the most marginal seat in Victoria, but it's a community that sort of is Frankston and Frankston North, so some really, you know, people in the area is really struggling. But very proud and strong people, and then, you know, goes all the way up sort of up the hills there. And then the last seat you'd be thinking about is La Trobe. Again, a really interesting mix of a seat. So think Berwick, that's traditionally a pretty strong Liberal end, and then it goes all the way up into the hills, sort of towards, you know, if you, I'm not calling everyone out there hippies out in Gembrook and Embrill, but you know who you are, and it goes all the way sort of towards Boronia and, you know, kicks towards Pakenham there. So that's a very big seat and a very diverse seat.
It's a very fast-growing population seat, isn't it?
Oh, huge. You know, you think of that, the city of Casey. You know, that's a huge population boom area, a real interesting mix of people who, you know, a lot of them are coming in that, you know, that city car park freeway. It's quite a
good place. A lot of them were the sort of Howard aspirational voters, weren't they?
A lot of them were. A lot of them were Howard's battlers, so traditionally blue-collar people in tradie-type jobs that had gone his way. They're up for grabs in this election because Bill plays very strongly to those people, where Malcolm Turnbull isn't quite such a fit. So, yeah, that'll be a very interesting seat. The one, you know, if you had, you know, an easy 50 to lay down for a surprise win that I don't think the betting markets will get to straight away, think Dunkley. That'll be the seat.
I was actually going to ask, Luke, if there was a wild card that you throw into the mix. You know, I think of Indi at the last election was someone that was very very helpful and one unexpected. Could there be another Indi?
Well, I don't know in Country Vic if we're going to find another Indi. Hopefully Indi remains Indi because Sophie Mirabella is back, baby, and that's just bad news. But
maybe good news for McGowan, though. She might be quite happy.
That'd be great.
The last poll I saw from out there was that she will win against Sophie Mirabella.
And won't that be another glorious day?
That'll be a really
when
good
she
time.
Brings it home. But Higgins, maybe Higgins will be the surprise. I don't know. That's a changing demographic in that community. You know, Calcat has got a shot. The Greens have got a shot. I'm not sure who the Green candidate is. Anyone here? Help me out.
Jason Ball.
Ah, there we go. Double down on that. So that might be a surprise. You know, if they're preferencing towards each other, there's a chance to do that. We saw what happened at the state election. So. Who knows?
That'll be exciting. The three-way tie, like we saw in Paran, well, not tie, but the three-way battle, like we saw in Paran electorate at the Victorian election in 2014, which was very exciting. That those
political
nerdy enough.
Yeah. So for all the geeks out there, what is happening with our demographics? It's quite amazing. Like, you know, you think around Brunswick and you think around Richmond, you think around Paran. You know, there are a lot of people who are traditionally working class folks who are now selling up and moving out. And there's an old different class coming in there who can afford to vote some of their aspirations. And that vote is changing. Those seats are changing hands.
So with that in mind and, you know, those kinds of voters in these marginal seats, and obviously we can't see the future, but what kinds of issues would you be expecting to be campaigned on to try to win those people over?
Well, in the four main marginals, like, it is going to be jobs, education, healthcare. Like, that is the progressive frame. If we go out of that frame, and this election about refugees and terrorism and, you know, the economy, that's the frame for, you know, a Liberal Party slam dunk. We're going to try to avoid that. So the way we can make the change is those who are out there having one-on-one conversations with your neighbours, with your friends, you know, join a campaign, you know, join, you know, GetUp was mentioned before, you know, they'll be doing some work. Environment Victoria are doing work. There's equal marriage campaigns. They're doing work. We're doing work. Like, you can come join any of these great campaigns and just go talk to the folks about the issues that you care deeply about, because they will see your passion, and on that passion, they will vote.
Both the Greens and Labor are running gay candidates in a number of those seats.
Isn't that awesome, right?
Gay candidates. So there might be some hope if any of those people get elected.
And Tim Wilson's running. Jim just joked.
No, but it is interesting.
I can't
because,
help myself now.
Higgins, yes, has two Green candidates.
Has two gay candidates.
Has a little bit, not two Green. Flip the tongue. Has two gay candidates with Jason Ball and Carl Cutter. Goldstein, which I always thought was Goldstein, it's not. Goldstein has gay candidates as well, Cheryl Herkus and Tim Wilson. And then the Greens is running a gay candidate in Deakin. So, you know, we're doing pretty well.
And
Labor's
running a gay candidate in Isaacs.
Yes. We are going to go to some messages. Again, we'd love to hear from you on 0427JOY949. That's 0427 569 949, or email onair@joy.org.au. You're listening to Is Nothing Sacred.
Now, Luke, we want to talk a bit more about the unions and what the unions can actually do for us all, and particularly what they can do for young LGBTIQ people, and not just about marriage. I mean, marriage equality is really important, but not everybody is avidly as in support of heteronormativity as what AME and Equal Love are. And, you know, I hold the unpopular view that marriage equality has sucked the life energy out of the gay community's radicalism. But anyway.
It does sound unpopular, Jim.
Well, maybe that's what the unions could bring back, Jim. Maybe that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, maybe. But you are doing things, aren't you, in terms of progressive politics and young people. So can you give us a sort of a bit of a rundown about where you are in that space, other than marching in Pride and...
Yeah, so there's quite a few things we're doing. We've recently launched a Young Workers Centre. And so what we want to do there is have a whole lot of young people who might have troubles at work. And, you know, often we find, you know, young people are far more likely to be bullied at work, and the LGBTIQ community can, you know, understand a lot of those experiences. The Young Workers Centre is a place where you can have a conversation with somebody about that, especially if it's affecting your workplace rights. And that can happen quite frequently.
And we've seen a few high-profile cases of that. The young woman who was bullied till she committed suicide.
Yeah, and we got Brodie's Law.
Cafe. Yeah,
but that was introduced. There hasn't been a lot of enforcement of that, but we have a place where you can do that. So what we've got is a group of young people who'll be sitting at the other end of the phone, and you'll call in, and they will talk to you about their rights. And those young people are law students who, as part of their degree, have done a placement out at Trades Hall, and they help their degree. And what they also learn is basically community law centre skills.
On the phone.
Yeah, they talk on a phone and they learn how to represent other people. And it's just terrific, because they'll do more than that. They'll go out to your workplace, they'll have you in, they'll even go to Fair Work and do that job with you. So what we want to do is to make sure that young people's rights are protected. Young people are five times more likely to be injured at work. The most common accident is a slip or a trip. Often that is in hospitality. And, you know, that's such a big problem out there. And when they do get injured, they are 21% more likely to need hospitalisation. So you not only get more likely to get injured, but when you do get injured, it's worse. So that's why we've got a group of people who, you know, you can come to and seek any type of industrial advice that you need. And that's a new thing at Trades Hall that wasn't around like 3 months ago.
It's an online or a virtual centre, is it? Is there going to be a face-to-face?
There's a face-to-face. There's a physical number. You can come in. You can meet with people. And if you do call up, there is a process in which you'll call. You'll speak to someone over the phone, and then we'll have you in to go through the case in more detail. We've had a couple of shocking cases come through us already. One was involved a church group that found out, you know, they're a pretty conservative church group that found out their partner, you know, had gone been dating another person and decided to sack them. So we represented that person and got them their payment back for what would be effectively like an unfair dismissal. So it's shocking cases all the time.
Yeah, who'd want to work back in a place like that?
Well, you know, not when you get judged like that, but, you know, unfortunately a lot of young people do get judged like that and get put in unfortunate circumstances. The most common issue, though, is often underpayment. 25% of young people are in some type of black market job where they're getting paid cash in hand. That means the employer isn't paying your taxes, isn't paying work cover, you're probably not getting super. The next most common issue is you're just not getting the right pay. So if you're working in a job right now, you're over, you know, you're not getting paid $17 and a little bit of change, you're probably getting underpaid. You can give us a call and we will represent. You can find out, you know, just Google the Young Workers Centre. You can find us online. You can just write to us if you want. But often it's underpayment issues.
I mean, I think one of the big issues around this, which is really important for people's future, is the fact that I keep hearing from people about how, you know, they ask their employees about their superannuation contributions and they get told, oh, don't worry about that. Don't even worry about that. They're all being fixed up. And then they leave and they discover they have no superannuation. Never been paid, ever. Well, which is illegal, isn't it?
It's illegal. Come to us. We will represent. And there's different ways we'll represent. You know, we'll work with you, whether about you want to join a bit of a campaign to get this going, whether you just want us to represent you industrially. Like, there's so many different mechanisms. Even some people are coming to us and say, hey, I want to speak out about my issues. I want to talk to the media. We'll help you with that too.
Because I think often the thing is that people don't necessarily know what's legal or illegal. They don't necessarily know where to go. Because I remember when I was 19, I was working very briefly in the hospitality industry, and I was getting paid, I think it was $10 or $11 an hour to do Saturday night shift. So that was like 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. I was given one half hour unpaid break in that whole 12 hours.
Did you get superannuation?
Don't remember. But and the other thing I remember is that there were shifts that would be on standby, so you had to have your Saturday night free to be called up at a moment's notice or cancelled at a moment's notice. And now I look back at those three things, like the amount of pay, the amount of breaks, that I had to stand up for 12 hours and that I had to be on standby and then not get paid. And I think that seems dodgy. But at the time, you're just like, oh, well, I'm a student. That's just what happens when you're a student.
Yeah. And what are we saying to a generation of young people coming to employment? It is okay to be exploited, and that's your very first experience.
You're worthless.
That's worthless. What we're saying. You know, you're not worth the minimum wage. Now, you should have been paid probably closer to $23 an hour at that moment, Saturday night. You should have been paid overtime for going over the 8 hours, and you should have even got paid breaks because you didn't get any of your other, you know, meal breaks or rest breaks. Now, I know hospitality is a, you know, young, fast, you know, hard-working jobs, but that is no reason
it's not
to be
Uber,
exploited.
Mm.
No.
Mm. And I think
someone's making money.
Like, it's a bit of a culture thing as well. I was reading a book which just came out last week by Jennifer Rayner called Generation Less, and this is one of the things she talks about, the, I guess, falling influence of the union and why we need to reverse that. And one thing she said, which is so obvious, but it hadn't occurred to me, she said, the casualisation of hospitality is not inevitable. And I thought, yeah, of course, but there's this sort of idea that, oh, hospitality is casual and that's just the way that it goes. But it's not. It's only the way that it goes, in inverted commas, because we haven't fought hard enough yet, and things have swung in the direction of the employers rather than the employees. That can not very easily be changed, but that could be changed for everyone.
Have you ever seen a hospitality strike in France? You know, we can make change. It's obvious we can make change. We just got to pull everyone together with a vision about what change needs to happen. Partly it's about pay, partly it's going to be about conditions, partly it's about respect. You know, that's a huge issue in many workplaces where people go home and they go, God, that was just a lousy day, a lousy experience. If you're going home every day and thinking, oh my God, I hate my job, you're probably getting exploited somehow, right?
Mm. It's so important. I suppose, Luke, it could be twofold. I suppose that a lot of young people, as you say, they haven't had that introduction to what a union is, and so when they hear, you know, a bit of union bashing, that's about all they've heard. So I suppose it is about them, you know, seeking out and realizing that unions do a hell of a lot of different work, which, you know, as you've already raised tonight, that they can actually call up and get help from a law student, give them advice on their rights. That could be maybe their first introduction, but then it is about, I suppose, the unions as well, as you say, working with communities that they haven't probably had as much impact with in the past, and certainly young people. I'm not sure, in terms of the stats, are there less young people that are unionised than perhaps older workers?
Yep, you're absolutely right. So only 8% of young people are members of their union, and that's largely because the education they've received might have been through tabloid newspapers, as opposed to what you'd get normal education through would be through a school environment. So our mission is really to go out and talk to as many young people as we can just before you get your very first job, so you know your rights, you know how to be safe at work, and that you'll have an organisation to come to and a community you can enjoy to enforce those rights. Because there's one thing to know about it, but the real thing is about having someone to stand up with you to help make sure your workplace is just a great place to work.
We do need to wrap up, sadly.
And that was a good note to wrap up on, in fact, because that sounds like, it sounds like the unions have actually been listening to young people and find out what actually concerns them and are responding to it. And that's really the key, isn't it?
So
thank you very much, Luke, for coming in tonight.
Well, what a pleasure it is to be here and talk to these listeners. It's amazing.
And if you've been listening and you want to find out more, you can check out the Trades Hall website. Is that right?
Yep. Just go to vthc.org.au. Check out Vic Unions on Facebook or Twitter. You'll see us there. Tweet me at Al Hilakari and I'll get back to you.
Mm. And we know that a lot of people don't, you know, may have tuned in at the end of the show. If you do want to reach and get the whole show, this is obviously podcasted. Thank you, James, for doing that. And we'll have that up in the next couple of days on Joy's website.
Absolutely. That's joy.org.au/isnothingsacred. Thank you so much, Luke.
And we'll have a picture of us all as well.
Let's do that now. Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.